Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. This is Zvi Hirschfield. I am coming to you from my home in Alon Shvut. We are picking up at the very bottom of 28b, Kafchet Amud Bet of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, and I'm going to continue through Chavtet Amud Aleph all the way to the beginning of Chavtet Amud Bet to finish the third chapter of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. So, Amar Lei Rabbi Zeira Lishamei. Rabbi Zeira said to his attendant, to his servant, Ichavein Utakali, have Kavanah and blow shofar for me. Alma Kasavar Mashmiya Bai Kavanah. It appears, the Gemara is saying, Rabbi Zeira holds that one who blows shofar for somebody else or does an act of mitzvah on behalf of somebody else has to have kavanah. So most Rishonim believe the two things are being taught here. Number one, he disagrees with Rava in that he believes that mitzvot do require kavanah. And number two, which will be our focus below, that when performing an act of mitzvah on behalf of somebody else, like reading Megillah for them or blowing shofar for them, one has to have the intention, kavanah, to be doing the act on their behalf. Meitvei, the Gemara is going to question this assumption of Rabbi Zeira, this halacha of Rabbi Zeira, with a quote from a Tannaitic text. Haya over achorei beit hakneset, osheya beito samuch lebeit hakneset, v'shama kol shofar o kol megillah, im kivein libo yatsa v'im lav lo yatsa. One who is passing behind the synagogue or his house is adjacent to the synagogue, if he happened to hear the sound of the shofar or the sound of the megillah being read, if he intended, if he had kavanah, intended his heart, yatsai fulfilled the obligation, ve'im lav lo yatsah. And if not, he did not fulfill his obligation. Now the Gemara begins to make its diuk to bring this as a kushia, as a challenge for Bizera. So here the Gemara asks as follows. V'chi chivein libo mai have. And so what if he had intention to fulfill the mitzvah? The person blowing the shofar, right, in the Beit Knesset doesn't know that he's there. He didn't have intention on his behalf. So therefore, what about Rabbi Zeira's halacha that the person performing the action has to have intention to fulfill the mitzvah on the other person's behalf? The Gemara answers, Hacha b'shaliach tzibur askinan, didate akule alma. Here is a case where it's the shaliach tzibur, it's the chazan. He's doing it on behalf of the entire community. He has everybody in mind. Anybody who might be listening, that would even include a person in their home or walking outside. Another attempt to refute Rabbi Zeira, Tashma, nitkaven shomeav lo nitkaven mashmia. Nitkaven mashmia lo nitkaven shomea. Lo yatsa. The Mishnah taught the listener has to have intention, and if he didn't, if the listener had intention and the person blowing did not have intention, or the person blowing had intention and the listener did not have intention, he has not fulfilled his obligation. Now comes the diuk. Katani mashmia dumya de shomea. And the Mishnah seems to say that the mashmia, the shofar blower, is the same as the shofar listener. Mashomea shomea la'atzmo, af mashmia mashmia la'atzmo. Meaning that just as the blower is, or the listener is listening for his own behalf, so too the blower is blowing on his own behalf. Meaning that it's a case where the blower did not have the listener in mind, but he was blowing for himself. Ukatani lo yatsa. And we learn from there that he has not fulfilled his obligation. This would suggest that the only reason he did not fulfill his obligation is because it was a case where one of them didn't have kavanah. But if both of them had kavanah, even if it was a kavanah only for himself, for the shofar blower, he would have fulfilled the obligation, therefore disproving Rabbi Zeira. So the new Gemara answer to this is Tanaehi. In fact, it's a machloket Tanaim. It's a dispute among the Tanaim. Titania, as we learn in the Braita, Shomea, Shomea la'atzma u'mashmia, mashmia lafi darko. The listener listens for himself, and the shofar blower, he just blows normally, implying he does not require special kavanah. Ama Rabbi Yossi, b'medvrim amurim, b'shliach tzibur. That's only Rabbi Yossi says in the case of the shliach tzibur. We can assume he has a general intention for everybody. Aval b'yachid lo yatsa. One person blowing for another, he has not fulfilled his commandment. Ad shid kavein shomea u'mashmia. Until they both have kavanah where the blower has kavana both for himself and the person he's blowing for. So a Turnzer Rabbi Zera holds like Rabbi Yossi, where one does need kavana to fulfill the mitzvah on behalf of another person. And perhaps more importantly for our whole context, Rabbi Zera seems to disagree with Rava and believes that to fulfill any mitzvah, you have to have kavana. As I mentioned last time, this is a debate among the Rishonim, how we paskin. The Rashba says you don't need kavana for mitzvot. The Rif, the Rambam, seem to suggest that you do. Okay, moving on to our new Mishnah. I'm sure Rachel is going to speak a lot about this Mishnah when she teaches it. The reference that quotes the Pasuk in the war against Amalek, where when Moshe lifted up his hands, the Jewish people would start winning the war. Now the Mishnah continues. V'chi yadav shel Moshe osot milchama o shorot milchama. Do the hands of Moshe literally either make or break war? El lomar lecha kol zman shayu Yisrael mistaklin klapei mala u'mishabdin et libam avim shvashamayim hayu mitgabrim. V'imlav hayu noflim. Rather, it's to teach you that whenever the Jewish people would look up, upward, i.e. towards God, and commit their hearts to their Father in heaven, they would be successful and they'd win. If not, they would lose. Another example, Kayotse b'devar ta'omer, aselah chasaraf v'simoto al neis v'yakol neshuchar ato v'chai. This is referring to the time in the book of Bamidbar where the Jewish people complained and they sinned and God sent snakes to bite them and to kill them. And when Moshe prayed on the people's behalf, God said, it's okay, make a snake, and whoever looks at the snake will become healed. So again, the Mishnah asks, V'chi nachash mit u'nachash mechayed, does a snake either kill or bring life? Ela bizman shisrael mistaklin klapei malo, m'shabdiyan libam avim ha'shashamayim, hayu mitrapim. That rather comes to teach you when the Jewish people would look upward and devote their hearts towards their Father in heaven, they would be healed, and if not, they would wither and die. Again, the message here is about, I think it's a Kavanah-related message, the idea that the action itself is not what holds the power, but rather it's the intention, it's the turning of the heart towards God. Maybe that's also a message about shofar. Shofar is not a magical instrument, but rather it is the Kavanah that we bring to the action which makes the action meaningful. Now the Mishnah goes on. Cheresh Shoteva Katan, Chovatan, right? A deaf person, a person who is mentally incapacitated, or a minor cannot perform actions that fulfill the obligations for others. Zehaklal, this is the general rule. Kol Sheno Muchuyabadavar Eno Motziat Rabbi Midei Chovatan. Anybody who themselves is not obligated in mitzvah cannot perform that mitzvah on behalf of others. This is, of course, a very important halachic principle and has raised all sorts of debate about who can be the shliach tzibur, who can be chazan, who can perform different acts on behalf of others in the community. Now the Gemara begins by quoting from a Mishnah or a Tosefta in Erchin. Tanu Rabbanan, Hakol chayvim b'tkiat shofar, kohanim, levim, v'yisraelim, gerim, v'avadim, v'shucharim, v'tumtum, v'androgynus, mishe chetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorim. The Mishnah says all are obligated in the blowing of shofar, priests, Levites, regular Yisrael, right, regular Jews, converts, freed slaves, right, a slave until they are freed, a Canaanite slave before they are freed are not obligated in time-bound commandments. A tumtum and a androgynous, someone whose biological sex is hidden because we can't, their private parts are covered by skin. An androgynous, somebody who has two sets of male and female private parts. One who is half eved and half free person. That can happen if an eved, a slave, is owned by two people and one of the owners frees that slave and the other holds on to him. Therefore, they are 50% eved and 50% free. And now the source continues. Tumtum eno motzi lo et mino v'lo et she'eno mino, androgynous motzi et mino avalo et she'eno mino. A tumtum, if he wants to perform mitzvah on behalf of somebody else, cannot fulfill the requirement both for another tumtum, a tumtum, and for others. The reason being that since his sex is unknown, we hold the suffix, the doubt, l'chumra, that since he might be a female and he's performing the mitzvah for one who is actually biologically male, he could not fulfill their requirement. Therefore, they do not perform mitzvot on behalf of others, but they can perform it for themselves. An androgyne, androgynos, mutziat mino, v'loch eino mino. Then androgynos can perform the mitzvah for other, androgynes, but not for anybody else, not for other men or for other women, because they are a category of suffolk, there is a doubt, and therefore we rule strictly in both directions, but they can do mitzvot for other androgynes. Mi shechetzio eved vechetzio ben chorin eino motze lo mino v'lo et she'eino mino. However, the half eved, half free person cannot perform commandments for other half eveds, half free people, and certainly not for those who are all free and not like them. We're going to discuss that a bit more later on towards the bottom of the page of what's going on there. Amar Mar. Now we're going to go back and take that opening line and delve deeper. Hakol chayavim b'tkiyat shofar, kohanim levim yisraeli. All are obligated to tkiyat shofar, priests, Levites, and just regular Jews. Pshita, that's obvious. Of course they are. Why would we think not? Ihani lo machayve, man machayve. If these are not obligated, who'd be obligated? Right? It's basic. Of course they're obligated in the mitzvot. And then the Gemara goes on, kohanim itzrichale. No, it needed to teach me that kohanim are obligated. Salka daita chamina, I might have thought, holy loktiv yom tri yelachem, that Rosh Hashanah would be a day of blowing for you, man delete ele betkia dechad yom ahud mechayev, vahani kohanim, ho'il v'idnu betkia kol hashanah, dichtiv utkate mechatsasort al olotechem, em ol v'chayevu, kamash malak. Meaning, I would have thought the following, that since the Pasuk said Rosh Hashanah is a day of blowing for you, that this would apply only to one who has to hear blowing one day a year, they're obligated. But these kohanim, since they hear tkiot all year round, as the pasuk says, we have to blow trumpets over the offerings. So kohanim hear tkiyas and blowing all year round. Maybe they are not obligated in Rosh Hashanah. It's only those who are only obligated one day a year. Kamash malan, therefore, the source had to teach us that kohanim are obligated. Now the Gemara asks a question about this. Midame, is it really comparable? Hatam chatzotzrot v'hacha shofar. It's not the same. The blowing that the Kohen has to hear over the sacrifices, that's with trumpets. And here we're talking a shofar. So there'd still be no reason to think the Kohanim were not obligated to hear the shofar. Ella itzrich, rather it's needed for the following. Salka daita chamina, what might I have said? Ho'il utznan shaveh yovel l'rosh shanah v'tkiyah l'brachot, since the Mishnah taught that the yovel year is compared to Rosh Hashanah, both in terms of shofar blowing and in terms of the Musaf prayer service, the blessings, the nine blessings are recited there. Man de'ite b'mitzvat hayovel, ite mitzvat Rosh Hashanah. Only one who is obligated in the Jubilee year would also be obligated in the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah. V'hani kohanim, these kohanim, ho'il v'leidnu mitzvah de Yovel, since they are not part of the mitzvah of Yovel, as the Mishnah says, kohanim levim mochrin la'olam v'goalin la'olam, kohanim and levim, they can sell at any time. They don't have to wait. They can sell their property at any time, and they can redeem them properties at any time. So the selling and redeeming of property is connected to the Jubilee year, because the Jubilee year, in every 50 year, all property goes back to its original owner. Therefore, since Kohanim and Levi'im are treated differently in the matter of ownership of land and the redeeming of land, Ema b'mitzvah Rosh Hashanah lo v'chayvu, maybe because Rosh Hashanah is connected to the Jubilee year, and the Jubilee year has associated rules that are different for Kohanim, Levi'im, and everybody else, then maybe too, Kohanim and Levi'im are excluded or not obligated to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. Kamash Malan, no, we don't say that, in spite of the fact that Yovel is connected to Rosh Hashanah, and the Rosh Hashanah, and Kohanim and Levi'im are not obligated in the Yovel laws the same way that everybody else is. We might have thought to say that Kohanim and Levi'im are not obligated in Shofar. The answer is we don't say that, and that's what that source was coming to teach. Now we're going to turn our attention to the part of the Mishnah that dealt with this these people of unusual status and fulfilling their obligations for themselves or others. So now we quote from the Mishnah. One who is half free and half slave cannot fulfill either the requirements either for those who are exactly like them, half free and half slave, and also for those who are not like them. Amar Rav Huna ula'atzmo motzi. Rav Huna said, but for himself, he can blow the shofar, or he can perform the commandment. Amarli Rav Nachman Rav Huna. Rav Nachman said to Rav Huna, Maishna la'achirim delo. What should be the difference? What is different about others that he cannot do it? Delo'ate tzad avdut umapik tzad chayrut. It's because when he does the action for others, he's this constant mix of free and slave. As I mentioned before, the slave is not obligated in the commandment. Only his side, his free side, is obligated in the commandment. Therefore, when he tries to perform the commandment for somebody else, that mixture, that element of the slave who's not required, will prevent him from fulfilling the requirement on behalf of anybody else. So Rav Nachman says, L'atzmo nami. The same thing would apply to himself. Lo ate tzad avdut tidei, umapik tzad chayrut tidei. That quite literally, the half of him or the part of him that is an eved cannot perform the action for the part of him that is free. It's almost like saying he is at once completely an eved and completely a free person at the same time, with the limitations of both. So even for himself, the free person that is him cannot fulfill a requirement through performed by somebody who has the side of the slave. So in this case, since he embodies both, he can't even perform the mitzvah for himself. So Ela Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman therefore said, Af la'atzmo eino motzi. He can't even perform the mitzvah for himself. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learn a similar ruling in a Braita. Misha Chetzio Eved B'Chetzio Ben Chorin, Af La'atzmo Eino Motzi. One who is half slave and half free, even for himself, he cannot perform the mitzvah and to fulfill his requirement. Tani Ava Berei de Rabbi Zeira. Ava, the son of Rabbi Zeira, taught the following. Kol HaBrachot Kulan, Af Al-Pi Shiatza Motzi, Chutz mi birkat alechem uvirkat hayayin. Shim lo yatsa motzi, ve'im yatsa eno motzi. Which means as follows. All blessings, and presumably right now we're talking about blessings of mitzvah, even though one has fulfilled the requirement, they can still recite it again and fulfill the requirement on behalf of somebody else. Except for the blessings over bread and wine. She'im lo yatsa motzi, that if one is not fulfilled their own personal requirement to make a blessing before eating bread or make a blessing before drinking wine, they can indeed make that blessing on behalf of others. Im yatsa, but if they have already done it, if I've already made motzi and had some of my bread and then you walk in and you don't know the blessing, eno motzi, I can't make the blessing on your behalf. Now, in general, the reason we say that one can make a blessing of mitzvah on behalf of somebody else, even though they've already fulfilled the requirement, or perform an action of mitzvah on behalf of somebody else, even though they've already fulfilled the requirement, is because, as Rashi says, Kol Yisrael Erevim Zelazeh, all Jews are connected to one another. That's the derivation over in Masechet Shavuot. And the Ran explains, since we're all connected to each other, if a fellow Jew has not yet fulfilled their requirement, I am on some level still obligated, because I share his obligation. It's a beautiful concept, particularly for this time of year. But when it comes to blessings over food, those are not obligations. That's simply an issue that we're not allowed to derive benefit from this world without a blessing. And therefore, no one's obligated to eat the bread or drink the wine. And therefore, only one who is about to derive benefit may indeed make those blessings. I should add here that some Rishonim, the Ritva, for example, believes that only bread and wine can you make on behalf of somebody else in any situation. But when it comes to other blessings like a shahakol or a mizonot, there he says, even you're about to drink water and your friend is about to drink some water, even though you have not made your blessing, you still cannot make the blessing for your friend. Only bread and wine work that way because you can share a su'udah. They have kfiyut. They have formality to them, unlike something like a glass of Diet Coke or a cup of coffee, even though I think coffee has a lot of formality, but even so. Baye Rava. Rava asked the following question. Birkat alechem shel matzah u birkat hayayin shel kiddush hayom mahu. right? So he points to the example where the Birkat Nehneim, the blessing over the food, actually plays an integral role in the performance of the mitzvah. So for example, the blessing of Hamotzi Lecha Min Haaretz that we recite before we consume the matzah, right? When we eat matzah on the Seder night, we recite two blessings. We recite a blessing of Hamotzi, and we also recite a blessing of Al-Achilat Matzah. Same thing with Birkat HaYayin for Kiddush, the blessing over wine. We recite the blessing of Kiddush, Mekadesh HaShabbat, or Mekadesh Yisrael VaHazmanim, but we also make a Borei Pri HaGafen because we're going to drink wine. So here, if I'm going to make Kiddush for somebody else, or I can clearly, it seems, I can make the blessing of Mekadesh HaShabbat, or Al Achilat Matzvah, because those are blessings of mitzvah, but what about the Birkat Nehneim? What about the blessing over wine and matzah? How do we view them? And here he spells it out. Mahu, what's the status of those blessings? Kevan dechovehi mapik, odilma bracha lav chovehi. Do I say that since the eating of the matzah and the drinking of the wine are an essential part of the performance of the act of mitzvah, therefore I view them like the required blessings, they're obligatory, and since they're part of the mitzvah, I can make them on behalf of somebody else, even though I do not myself do not need to drink wine or eat matzah. Or Dilma Bracha Lav Chovehi, perhaps not. Perhaps I would say they are not part of the obligation. They're simply, as Rashi says, they are, since I'm going to drink wine or eat the matzah, I am also required to make the Birkat Nehneim, the Motzi or the Borei Pri HaGafen, but they are not considered part of the mitzvah, and therefore I could not make them on somebody else's behalf. Tashma, come in here to resolve this Safek, this doubt. The Amar Ravashi, Ravashi said, Ki havenem be Rav Papi havi mekadashlan. When I was visiting Rav Papi, he made kiddush for us. V'chi have ate arise midavra havi mekadash lehu. And when his tenant farmers came in later, he made kiddush for them as well, indicating that indeed the Borei Pri HaGafen of Kiddush is seen as part of the mitzvah of making Kiddush. And even though if they were just drinking wine at a regular time, he could not make a bracha of Borei Pri HaGafen on their behalf. Since it's part of Kiddush, he was allowed to. Tanu Rabbanan, quote another Tanitic source, Lo Yifros Adam Prusalo Orchin Ela Imkein Ocheli Mehem. A person should not, and here, literally means like, you know, slice off some bread. But what it means is, I think in this context, a person should not make hamotzi for their guests unless they are going to eat with them. Aval, poresu levanov livnei veto, kedei lachanchan b'mitzvot. However, one would be allowed to make hamotzi for the people of their household, even though they are not going to eat bread, in order to educate them in the mitzvot. Uvahal of the Megillah, afal bishiyatza motzi. When it comes to the recitation of halal, the recitation of Megillah, even though one has already fulfilled the requirement, one can certainly recite those again on behalf of those who are listening in order for them to fulfill their requirement, and one would also make all the required blessings on their behalf as well. Interesting note, right, this idea of making a bracha, the Ritva explains that since a bracha that it's not needed is really only a rabbinic prohibition, the rabbis did not say that one could not do that in a place of a rabbinic requirement, to which is also to teach one's children in the mitzvot. That is the end of chapter 3. Join me next time. We'll beginning on 29b, Chavtet Amud Bet, as we begin chapter 4. Thank you for joining.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty, and thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning, and visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.